Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour editorial review. Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Business, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and editorial review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on economic meltdown when we come back. You know, with an income of $50,000, you pay about $7,650 in Social Security taxes if you're self-employed, paying that 15.3% rate. Well, then, shouldn't you subtract the $7,650 from your $50,000 paycheck and then pay your income tax on the $42,350 balance instead of paying 17% of that $50,000 a second time? But you know the IRS makes you pay 15.3% of $50,000 in Social Security tax, and then they make you pay 17% of that same $50,000 in income tax. Now that means that you pay 17% of $7,650 twice. Now that little bookkeeping trick steals an extra $1,300 from everyone who pays this tax. Now what would you think if Sears or Penny's or your credit card company charged you twice like Social Security and the IRS does? I thought you'd think that was just kind of real special. Now, if you'd like more information about tax and status, why don't you call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967, and be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free of charge. That number to call again is 417-273-4967. Now, tax and status is available on compact disc for adult home education. And if you're online, you can go to the website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click on the email and send an email request for your free general law CD package. Why don't you do it right now before you forget? All right, last time we were talking about this thing of the economic meltdown, citing some information from Bob Chapman's international forecaster. I said last time we'd take a look at Argentina, Russia's two-tier money system, and Jack Murtha, the Marine Corps representative. Jack Murtha is a representative from Pennsylvania. He's a Democrat. He's been opposed to the war in Iraq for some time now. He sees it as a no-win war, as a dead-end, bogged-down, going-nowhere, solving no problem war in Iraq. And of course, he's taking heat from both sides. He's taking heat from his party, the Democratic Party, and he's taking heat from the president and the Republican Party. Now, occasionally you'll find a fellow like that, a fellow like Ron Paul or Jack Murtha. There's not everybody in Congress, you know, that's working for the Committee of 300, or at least not directly. Most are. You can forget about voting the bad guys out and voting some good guys in the next election. That isn't going to happen. But once in a while, we get a little shade of truth. We get a little piece of information that comes through the press or comes through the Congress or maybe even once in a while from the White House. Now, I told you a time or two about the privateer. This week's privateer, volume 546, mid-February issue, 2006. Now, this is volume number 546. In the global report on the front page, he says, "We're living in perpetual crisis. We do not live in normal times. In historical terms, the West has not really lived in normal times since about 1900. So what were these once normal times? Well, they were an epoch of international peace and global free trade. With the exception of the United States behind its tariff walls, they were an epoch when all private business was in fact private. The exemplar nation was Great Britain, solidly placed on the gold standard and setting the example for the entire world. Back then, the total cost of government was 4% of Great Britain's gross domestic product. Balanced budgets were taken for granted, and deficits were held in deep scorn. Before 1900, in the age of classical political liberalism, it was the given that the way to measure a nation's advance was to measure how far and how fast that nation was advancing towards a greater degree of privacy. Privacy itself was founded upon a towering respect for private property. Public or official life ended at the property line, and behind that line, private life began, and that went for individuals and businesses. A business was nobody's business except for the proprietors or the owners of that business. Now, this economic standard was equally well known back then as the real rate at which any nation added new capital to its existing stock of capital. Classical liberalism had assured individual freedom and liberty. Classical economics assured the advance of freedom in the economic realm. followed by individual liberty based upon property. These were and are peacetime standards. People even talked of perpetual peace. Thought I'd make a comment on that. I've said before, this guy that writes The Privateer, his name is William Buckler. This is a guy that's got his head screwed on straight. Here's a fellow who looks at history, applies history to the current time, and then says, well, how is this going to work out in the future if we continue doing what we're doing? I've mentioned the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. Well, notice that the first plank to the Communist Manifesto calls for the eradication of private property. You see, the Ten Commandments say thou shalt not steal. So the law that says thou shalt not steal is the basis of private property. I mean, it's just that simple. Without a law that says thou shalt not steal, you can't have, you can't hold, you can't use, you can't buy, sell, trade private property. So when our president, back in the 1930s, Franklin D. Roosevelt, abolished private property by bringing in the New Deal policy, the New Deal political establishment, effectively abolished thou shalt not steal, not in 1 year, not in 1 month, not in 1 week. It was a policy that has been permeating American society now for about 75 years. And in that 75 years, we have moved from private property, thou shalt not steal, to from each according to his ability and to each according to his need. We have adopted the income tax, central banking, public schools, Social Security. These are elements of the exact opposite to private property. But he goes on and he says, America's hidden economic depression. He said, Americans spent U.S. $42 billion more than they earned last year. Now that turned the annual U.S. savings ratio negative. It fell to minus 0.5% per year, or 0.5% last year. And this is the first time that the U.S. savings ratio has gone negative for an entire year since way back in 1932 and 1933. Now think of that. It was the last Great Depression when our savings rate had gone negative. But there's more. And the U.S. was struggling to cope with the Great Depression. Well, in December of 2005, U.S. consumer spending rose by a bigger than expected 0.9%, while incomes were up just 0.4%. In other words, spending is double what the income gains are. Americans are making a dollar, and they spend it. And then they make a dollar and a half, and they go out and spend $2. Now, that forced the savings rate down for the month to a negative 0.7%. Now, if you take 0.7% for a month, let's just do that, 7 times 12 is 8.4% a year. 8.4% less savings per year, if you extrapolate that out for the whole year, than it was last year, the year before, or the year before that. Now, remember, it's savings that creates the capital for which you invest in your plant and equipment, from which you derive a higher and higher standard of living. And we Americans used to compute it when I was a kid this way. We would take the statistics and we'd say, well, how long did Granddad have to work to buy a gallon of gas back in 1920? And we'd say, well, he had to work 30 minutes to buy a gallon of gas. Well, by 1950, we would say, well, how long does Dad have to work to buy a gallon of gas? And maybe it was 15 or 20 minutes. So we would say, well, look at that. We have made real economic gains. We can buy the same goods and we only have to work half as long to do that, or 32 minutes instead of 38 minutes or something like that. Today we don't measure that way. We measure in absolute terms. We like to talk about how much money we make per hour. I'm making $20 an hour. I talked to a fellow the other day and he was making $20 an hour. I thought, wow, that's really pretty good. I can remember when I first started work, I was making $3.27 an hour as a machinist in the union with seniority, riding on top of the world, top of the wage structure, $127 a week. Lived quite nicely on $127 a week. What Americans don't add in or don't factor in is the inflation rate. We still talk in terms of absolute dollars as opposed to purchasing power. What happened to our purchasing power? Well, the purchasing power is going down. So because purchasing power is going down, to maintain our standard of living, we borrow more money. We're actually making less and less money, so we borrow more and more money, and we amass more and more debt. Then we couldn't cover the debt, so we thought, well, what we'll do is use our homes or use our houses now as ATM machines, and so we've been borrowing the equity out of our houses. Boys and girls, all these newsletter writers are telling us is that at some point in time, that's all going to come to an end. And when it comes to an end in a family, they go bankrupt. But when it comes to an end in an industry, the industry ceases to exist. It goes out of business. It moves to China. When it happens to a nation, like it did Argentina back in 2001, the nation doesn't cease to exist. They go through economic turmoil. If they can't pay for the oil that's coming in from Saudi Arabia, the Saudi Arabians don't send them any more oil. And then all of a sudden in the country, the price of that oil skyrockets, the price of gasoline skyrockets. So prices go up at the very same time that wages go down. Unemployment goes up. And so the Argentines, at the peak of their demise this last time around, had 62% unemployment, raging inflation, and terrible shortages. People were saying, gosh, if I only had milk to feed my baby. Why weren't they thinking about that prior to this economic implosion? Why aren't Americans thinking about that ahead of this economic debacle, before the meltdown occurs? Why weren't we thinking about this in the 1950s, 60s, and 70s, when there was something we could have done about it? Why wait until now, when there's nothing that you can do to stop it? He goes on, he says, only the United States welfare state, which didn't exist in 1932 and 33, disguises the fact today. What also disguises it is the huge increase in treasury borrowing. They can't tax. To do so would break the facade. From President Bush's State of the Union address, by 2030, spending for Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid alone will be almost 60% of the entire federal budget. And that will present future Congresses with impossible choices. Staggering tax increases, immense deficits, or deep cuts in every category of spending. That's the U.S. future. Tax increases, deficits, and deep spending cuts. Option four. Politely enough, President Bush left out the fourth option. That is, the option where everybody actually gets all that they're entitled to by the straightforward means of the Fed printing out of thin air the U.S. dollars required. The political promises are kept with a worthless United States dollar in terms of purchasing power. Now, that's the fear that almost all conservatives have, and that is that instead of opting for deflation and curing the overconsumption, the excesses that we have all been participating in over the last 75 years, and going back to gold and silver coin, just weights and balances that God told us to go back to, instead of doing those kinds of sane, intelligent things, doing that which we were doing back in 1900, when gross domestic product and the cost of government were in line, were in equilibrium. No. Instead of doing that, we will just print the money that we need to pay. Let's test it for a minute. Think about this. Let's suppose that you're a representative in government and you're in the Congress, and you're a sincere, hard-working congressperson, and you want to raise the standard of living of all Americans, all of the people in your district, and you come up with a new plan, and you say, gosh, government has control of the monetary system, so why don't we make everybody wealthy? Let's go out and print $1 million in $100 bills, and let's distribute $1 million to every American in $100 bills, cash, $1 million, and the government will pass it out to every American. That's what Americans vote for, by the way. They vote for those senators and representatives who can deliver to them those pork barrel projects like a bridge for $230 million in Alaska. That's why they vote Ted Stevens back into office year after year, because Ted brings home the bacon. Well, let's do better than that. Let's give everybody in America $1 million. Now, tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock, you've got your $1 million. What are you going to do with it? You going to go to work today? Do people who have $1 million go to work at Bessie's restaurant, or do they go to work at General Motors and Ford? No, they go to the mall, and they start spending and buying things. Boy, that'll stimulate the economy, won't it? All right, so everybody in America now with $1 million in his pocket goes down to the mall and starts buying. How much in the way of goods or services are available to every American today, with the amount of money that's in circulation today? The answer, last time I saw an answer, was 2%. So if we all took the money that we've got today and we went down to the mall and started buying things, we could only buy 2%. That's all that's on the shelves. Now, can you imagine where we would be if we just printed up $1 million and gave it to everybody in the country? Why, there wouldn't be 2%. And pretty soon the store shelves are going to be empty, aren't they? That's wonderful. That's great. That's a stimulus. Now, are you going to go to work tomorrow and make those goods that need to be put back on the shelves? Not as long as you've got $1 million in your pocket. Now watch what happens. The shelves are empty, and we don't have any workers. So the only place that you can get merchandise to fill the shelves is going to be from overseas, isn't it? So we're going to have to go to China and India and Pakistan and Philippines and other places to buy the big screen TVs and the shoes and all the things that we want to buy with our millions and millions of dollars, right? So we start buying the stuff and bringing it in from overseas, and we start paying these Chinese and Filipino laborers and businesses with these $100 bills that we got from our Congress, remember? And so how long will the Chinese take these paper dollars for their big screen TVs and automobiles and shoes and all the things that they send to us? They'll take that until they get to the point where they want to spend those dollars to buy Caterpillar tractors or Dell computers or something from America. Now, are Americans producing Dell computers and Cadillac automobiles and Caterpillar tractors? Well, not if they all have $1 million. And you know, boys and girls, if you stop and think about it, that's the dilemma that we find ourselves in. We're uncompetitive around the world. And we have lots of money. We have more money than we have goods to buy in the stores by 98 to 2%. And we're buying all of this stuff from overseas, and we're just waiting for that inevitable day when those people overseas that have been supplying us, we call this the balance of payments deficit every month, it amounted to $725 billion last year. And one of these days, somebody's going to wake up and say, we better cash our dollars in because they're becoming worthless. The Americans don't produce. The Americans take from us, but they don't give us anything in return. They give us these promises to pay. Meanwhile, we have exported our textile industry. We have exported our auto industry, our machine manufacturing businesses, our shoe manufacturing, our television manufacturing. These businesses, boys and girls, are gone. They're closed down. They've exported these machines and tools and factories to China. You could not make shoes. Here in the United States, we used to make all of our shoes. Today, we import 99% of our shoes. Only 1% are made here, which means that this is great for people around the world, and it boosts the world's economy, and it boosts the standard of living for Chinese. But boys and girls, let's wake up to reality. You're tapped out. You're mortgaged out. You've got plenty of money. You've got plenty of credit. But you can't pay your bills, and that's what all of these newsletter writers are trying to tell you. That's what they're trying to tell you. And they've been saying it for the last 30 years, preaching to the choir. And now we get to the point where, option four, politely enough, President Bush left out the fourth option, and that is the option where everybody actually gets all that they're entitled to by the straightforward means of the Fed simply printing out of thin air the U.S. dollars required. The political promises are kept with a worthless U.S. dollar in terms of purchasing power. And here comes Helicopter Ben Bernanke, the guy who said a couple of years ago that what we need to do if liquidity becomes a problem is simply dump $100 bills out of helicopters. Well, I guess that's where the Congress just gives everybody in America $1 million. And it ushers in what we call hyperinflation, which I would contend is going to be the worst of both worlds. I've been watching this for many, many years, and I noticed that in a depression, it's over and done with, and the value of money maintains itself. And goods are hard to buy because money is hard to come by, but when you come by the money, you've got some money to buy something with. Hyperinflation works just exactly the other way around. You got plenty of money, but it drives out the goods. You know, there's an old adage that says, bad money drives out good money. And that's precisely where we're headed. Bad money drives out good money. Now, there's a little bit of hope. There still is gold and silver around. There is something that George Gordon can do and you can do to protect your assets. You can get out of debt, go pay off your debts. You can put away a food supply. You can get yourself out of debt, or you can restructure your debt so that you've got something over here. If you've got a great big house that's worth $1 million, and let's say you've got $300,000 in equity, you could sell that house and pass the old maid, the debt, to somebody else. And you could take the $300,000 and go out and buy a house for $100,000 or $150,000. You know, just a little house. Just a little house. But you'd own that house free and clear. Then, when this economic upheaval comes, you'll be sitting here in your little house, free and clear, and the guy who bought your big house will have the mortgage, and he'll either be able to make the payments or he won't, and if he can't, then whoever it is that really owns the house will kick him out and he'll be homeless. He won't have your big house. He won't have any house, but you will have your little house. So it's a choice, boys and girls. Do you want to have a little house with a roof over your head, or do you want to have a big house and no roof over your head? That's a choice that we all have to make. 74 million older Americans with no place to go. These are the Americans who are now approaching retirement. Their first cohort, a demographic term, arrives this year. For the next 25 to 30 years, they will keep arriving year by year. All of them expect to be fed, to live in houses, and to have the medical care which their government has promised and that they have paid for. What they don't know, or what they have chosen not to think about, is that sequential governments, starting with Presidents Kennedy and Johnson, have looted the Social Security Trust Fund and already spent the money. And this was done by the simplest of means. The presidents and the members of Congress, with a very few exceptions, agreed to place non-tradable notes in the Social Security funds and then spend all the cash. That money went into all of the usual spending for important purposes, such as getting reelected. And it's all gone, and only the non-tradable IOUs are left. Do you remember President Clinton talking about balanced budgets? Well, the Social Security Fund has been generating a surplus since about 1983, when they dramatically increased the taxes. And it will be producing $100 billion a year surplus until the year 2012, when it goes back to zero, and then it starts showing a deficit again until the year 2032, when it will show a $3.4 trillion deficit. But meanwhile, they've been taking that $100 billion a year, every year, and spending it on bridges in Alaska and all kinds of important things like that, pork barrel projects, and putting an IOU into the fund. Isn't that just real special? Now, all these economic fallacies rebound and then compound. The father of modern Western welfare state was German Chancellor von Bismarck. He wanted to pull Germans away from socialism and towards his own royal government and state. So he set up an old person's pension scheme. It was the simplest of gimmicks. Every working German paid into it for all of their lives. When retirement came, at the age Bismarck chose, which was 65, only about 10 to 15% of those Germans were left alive. Life expectancy was shorter then. The rest had departed earlier for the natural reasons, and in effect, 100% of Germans paid the government for this future pension all of their lives, but only 10 to 15% actually lived long enough to see any pension at all. Bismarck's government walked away with the money that the other 85 to 90% had paid but never received, and Germany spent all of that money on arms. But this welfare scheme had other economic consequences. Germans nearly stopped saving. And why save when you're being taxed for a future pension anyway? Why carry the double load? So most stopped individual savings for their older years, and this was a pension ahead to look forward to. Now, since the tax for the future pension was set purposely very low, Germans spent all of their discretionary income on current consumption. In effect, as their personal savings went down and their spending went up, their present living standards improved, and all that, and an assured government pension too. Bismarck's idea caught on like wildfire before the year 1900. The ability to tax 100% and later only pay out 10 to 15% had irresistible appeal to governments. But it had other economic and very real consequences as more and more Western nations switched to an old age pension scheme. People not only stopped saving, they spent what should have been for their individual savings. Consumption in Western world or in the Western world boomed from the early 1890s right up until just before World War I. Business loved it. And it's no wonder that this epoch later became known as the Gilded Age, as millions of people consumed several economic levels above their earnings level. The whole scheme began to unravel shortly before World War I, when these now absent individual savings no longer showed up as new investments. There was a piper to pay, which brought on, you know, when you take a look at World War I, it brought on World War I. And then we had the Roaring Twenties, and then that brought on the Great Depression, which in turn brought on World War II. Boys and girls, we're right back to where we were with the Gilded Age and the Roaring Twenties and World War I and World War II. The world now is teetering on the brink of a new round of world war, which will probably usher in, probably, the Second Coming, the Great Battle of Armageddon, spoken of in the Scripture. And we see this great battle being fought in Israel, in the Middle East. And what's in the Middle East that everybody is fighting over? And we're fighting over Israel and war. Or Israel and oil. And that's what this war is all about. Israel and oil. Just thought I'd share it with you. Now, this guy, the privateer, Bill Buckley, Buckler rather, puts out a tremendous newsletter. I'm going to give you his name and address. I'll take a little risk here. He told me sometimes back, he said, now, don't you cite from my newsletter anymore. I thought this little piece here, the first two pages, were pretty important. It's like economics 101 for us truck drivers. And then he tells us a little story every month and gives us a little better economic understand. So if you're a soccer mom, you know, Sally Soccer Mom or Joe Sixpack out there, and your real concern in life is the scores on the sports section of the news, or getting your kid to the soccer practice, or getting your hair appointment done. You know, the average American today is real concerned about important things like Super Bowl and World Series and soccer games and things like that. And this guy's newsletter, The Privateer, is the place to start. The Privateer, you can get a subscription there, $180 a year, 25 issues. That's $180 Australian. I think that it's probably around $130 a year, about the same price here as the International Forecaster. Why don't you go to their webpage? It's www.the-privateer.com. www.the-privateer.com. privateer.com. They've also got an email here. Let's see what it is. Here it is. It's CAPT at theprivateer.com. Now remember that the privateer has a hyphen in it. The-privateer.com. Their email is CAPT. Or you can write them. The publisher is William A.M. Buckler, Post Office Box 2004, Noosa Heads, Queensland, 4567, Australia. That's William A.M. Buckler, P.O. Box 2004, Noosa Heads, N-O-O-S-A, H-E-A-D-S, Queensland, Australia. And after Queensland, they've got 4567, Australia. I suppose that's important. Hey, let me give you a reminder here before we get any further into the program that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. It can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, economics, history, health, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to the authors and publications that we use on this program and often endorses and recommends books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are going to reciprocate. Most of these authors and publications cited on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. View, at least not in whole. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website, that's georgegordon.org, or call the Law School Direct at 417-273-4967. All right, let's take a look now at the international forecaster again. Remember, I talked about Jack Murtha. Well, Bob Chapman mentions Jack Murtha in this issue of the newsletter. I want to remind you that Russia went through a two-tier monetary system when the Soviet Union's excesses collapsed. It was about, I don't know, 5 years ago, maybe a little over five, six, seven, 8 years ago. Now, here's what they did. They had an internal currency, and then they had an external currency. And so when they went broke or when they went bankrupt, they had a currency that they used outside of Russia. That was to pay for their oil and other things. And then they had a currency that they used inside of Russia. That was to buy that same oil and other things. Well, they had a 2,000% inflation. They went through a hyperinflation. One day they changed the money. And when they change the money, they're going to change it on a Friday. They always do. You'll finish the week and you'll come home from work. And then you'll find on the news Friday night that the money is being changed. And they give you a limited amount of time to turn the old money in. So you'll have to go down to the bank on Monday. They'll give you about a week to turn in all of your money. This catches all the tax cheats and the people that have saved up all this cash in this currency form. And then for every, you know, $100 that you've got, they'll give you $50 or $10 or $2 or something in return in the new colored money. I mentioned that to you last time. New colored money. Now, if you're dealing in currency and you have $100,000 in $100 bills in the mattress, the net effect of this is that you know that today you could go down with your $100,000. And you could buy 100,000 loaves of hillbilly bread for a dollar a loaf. Okay? Now, when this devaluation occurs, your same $100,000 will go down and buy 50,000 loaves of hillbilly bread. You'll lose half your purchasing power. And that's what the Swiss bankers are expecting, about a 50% devaluation when it comes. So I got to thinking about that, and I said, gee, I don't think I want to have very many dollars. I want to have something else like wheat, corn, beans, honey, oil, gold, silver, you know, something of tangible value. You might take your excess dollars and pay off the debt, you know, so that you can have something that's free and clear. And I know right away you're going to say, ah, I know what I'll do. I'll wait until this devaluation comes. Wait a minute. When you wait until the devaluation comes, you take a $100 bill in and you walk out with a $50 bill. How's that going to help you pay off your debts? Now, in a runaway inflation, it works just the opposite. After this devaluation, prices will immediately start moving up. People who were selling hillbilly bread yesterday for $1 a loaf will now want $2.50 a loaf. Not just $2. They'll bump the price up a little higher. This in turn means that you can't buy as many loaves of hillbilly bread. So you got to have a pay increase. But here's what your problem is with pay increases. And this is what the people down in Argentina discovered. When the economic meltdown occurs, business is thrown into a helter-skelter chaos. So you get laid off for a while. You come back to work, and you were making $10 an hour, and now your boss says, well, because of the devaluation and so on, we're only going to pay you $8. Now, you might get mad and say, well, the hell with you, and go someplace else. But after a few months of this, you'll be happy to take the $8. Unemployment begins to go up. And more people that are unemployed are willing to work for less and less money. So pretty soon, you're back here working for $8 now, and some other guy comes in and talks to your boss and says, well, I'll do old Joe's job over there for $6. And so they bump you, and they put this new guy in there working for $6. As unemployment grows, some other guy comes in and says, hey, you got this guy Bob working for $6 an hour, and I'll work for $4. And so they bump Bob, and they hire this new guy. And then as unemployment reaches 62%, which is what it peaked out at in Argentina, 62% unemployed, then some guy comes in and says, well, I'll do it for $2 now. So it's a race to the bottom is what it is. So you've got this stagflation. You've got lowering wages, rising prices, and more unemployment. Now, that's what you have to look forward to. And then, of course, your creditor, he comes along, and he takes your house away from you and your car and all of these toys that you've been buying. And like as not, he goes bankrupt. And his creditors take all those toys. I mean, it's just a bad scene for everybody. It is the worst case scenario. But we've gotten to the point where it's now unavoidable. The corrective actions that we could have taken back in the 50s and 60s and 70s and 80s and so on, we never did take any of those corrective actions. And the people in South America are looking at us, the Americans, and saying, couldn't you learn from our mistakes? Remember the Figge report? And the South Americans were asking the Figge researchers, well, why don't you Americans learn from our mistakes, and why don't you avoid that? Well, I don't know. I guess it's human nature. It's just the way people live. It's just the way people do things. Now, there are people that can look ahead. They're called prophets. You know, they look ahead. And this guy, Buckler, who is writing The Privateer, is in fact a prophet. Not a prophet in the sense of Ezekiel and Isaiah and Jeremiah. You know, not one of these, you know, long-haired, ratty bearded, dirty, barefooted, shepherd steak type guy standing up here screaming out, flee from the wrath to come. He's a prophet in the sense that he's simply applying the lessons of history with reason, logic, and common sense and saying, hey, boys and girls, this is where the rubber meets the road. Bob Chapman's doing the same thing. The Magombo, Richard Dottie, is doing the same thing. Every week you can get a free report. A free report from Kitco.com. Just click on to the web, Kitco, KITCO.com, and there's a number of economic writers. The Magombo is one that comes to mind, and a guy by the name of Richard Apple is another. That's two. And they put out a little short paper. You know, it'll be 6 pages, 2 pages, something like that. There's about 6 or 8 of those reports, and they're free. Kitco is trying to sell gold. And so in order to sell gold, they put out leaders, and these newsletters are their leaders. And it doesn't cost anything. And they'll tell you what some of the numbers are. They'll tell you, for instance, the Magombo guru, he's a pretty humorous guy, and he writes a newsletter in the very, very first paragraph. Every week on Wednesday, comes out on Wednesday, I ask my boy Dirk, I say, have you got my Magombo guru? And pretty soon he comes in, here's the Magombo. In the very first paragraph, he says, here's how much new money and credit's being created by the banks and the Federal Reserve. Every Wednesday, I can find out how much new money is being printed. And then he'll give you a couple of numbers on there, and he'll tell you, well, that's a 10% increase per year, or 8%, and that tells you what the inflation rate is. Tells you what the inflation rate is. And it doesn't cost you anything. So why don't you avail yourselves of that newsletter, the Magombo Guru and Richard Apple, and there's 3 or 4 or 5 others. I don't have them right here in front of me. I can't remember all the writers' names. And then there's the Privateer and the International Forecaster, and don't forget Franklin Sanders and the Money Changer. Now, if you're probably normal, you can't afford to buy every newsletter that comes by, but I'll tell you, if you can afford to buy USA Today, you can afford to buy one of these newsletters, and you're going to learn a hell of a lot more from a conservative newsletter than you're going to get out of USA Today, or out of your cable television, or out of CBS or ABC News. Not that you shouldn't be watching ABC and CBS. I watch them every night. I want to watch Bob Schieffer and make sure that I'm getting all the propaganda that I'm supposed to get so that I can stay abreast of what's going on in the world. But I also want to know, what in the hell does all of this mean? What's the other side of the coin? So last time we found out, as we were reading through the International Forecaster, that indeed President Bush gave us some facts and figures. He said the economy is growing 3.4% a year. What he didn't tell you is the money supply is growing at 10% a year. And we put the money supply into GDP. And that's why the economy is growing, because we're printing money. He didn't tell you the rest of the story. Old Paul Harvey used to have a little piece on there called The Rest of the Story. Remember that? He'd tell you a little leader and he'd give you a little teaser, and then he'd say, okay, now I'll be back with the rest of the story. Then he'd put on a couple ads and come back and then tell us the rest of the story. And that's what Bob Chapman did. He said, well, let me tell you the rest of the story. And that's what each and every one of us needs. It's the rest of the story so that you can make an intelligent decision. Now, you may be a truck driver or a soccer mom or a Sally six-pack or whatever you are in life, whatever you do, but, you know, you've got some genius in you. You've got some common sense. And if you had all of the facts in front of you, I think that you could make better decisions, and that you'd make better decisions for your own family, for yourself, and in your own self-interest than you're going to make if you're listening to President Bush or Wall Street Week or some other guru who's telling you that you should be investing in stocks. Now, I'm not telling people to invest in stocks, and I'm not telling people not to invest in stocks. I don't care what people invest in. But I have pointed out to you a time or two that you've got some laws here that we got from God himself that said, thou shalt not steal, and you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag. So when some guy is telling you, you should be using gold and silver coin, and our government should be using gold and silver coin, that guy's giving you the straight skinny that comes right out of the Bible, which is exactly what God's been telling us for thousands of years. And then one day, Franklin Roosevelt came along and said, no, no, God's got his head up the wrong end of his anatomy. What we want, what we need in this country is a central bank. What we need in this country is a higher income tax. What we need is Social Security. What we need is to practice more communism. Only they didn't call it communism. They didn't call it socialism. They called it the New Deal and the Fair Deal. Remember that? And then came President Kennedy, and he came along with the New Frontier. Catchy little phrases, sound bites, to get you to buy, to get you to bite. Well, the more we look at the situation that Ben Bernanke is in, the more that we believe that we'll have at least two more quarter percent interest rate increases, and maybe two more before the year is over. Now, that'll be a full 1% in the year 2006, interest rate increases. Bernanke will use them as a cover to convince investors and professionals that he's an inflation fighter, while he's expanding the money supply and credit at more than 10% per year. And that is the plan, and that is why in a few weeks M3 will no longer be published. He and his masters want to deceive us. In just a few days as I speak, they're going to stop printing or stop publishing the M3 money supply report. I'm sure that the underground press will be able to compute. It isn't impossible to figure out what the money supply is, but it'll no longer be published. So they'll have to extrapolate it from other statistics and other numbers. But you can rest assured that the newsletter writers will do the math, and they'll come out and say money is expanding at, they're printing new money and they're putting it into the system at a 10% or an 8% or 12% rate, whatever it is. And then you can take that M3 money supply, which is not being published, and you can compute what inflation is going to be in 30 months, because it takes about 3 years for this money to work its way through the system and to come out in higher prices. So all this money that's being printed and all this money that's being borrowed to pay for Hurricane Katrina and Rita and the wars is about to come home to roost, and we're going to see dramatically higher prices. And during the Korean War, President Truman, when prices started to expand, then started putting on controls, and they'll come up with wage and price controls. That exacerbates the problem. And then they'll come up with rationing. And then if you don't have a Social Security number, you won't be able to get a ration card, and you won't be able to get in line and share the shortage like all communists and socialists ultimately do. Now, that's what we have to look forward to, is sharing the shortage. That's the difference between capitalism and communism. Now, we Americans have adopted, in fact, all of our Western societies have adopted this communist ideology, communist philosophy, and it'll ultimately end up just like the old Soviet Union did. Ultimately, it collapses of its own weight, but it doesn't collapse until we finally get to the end of our rope and we lose everything that we've got. Then we can go back to work. Now, that's what the Argentines are doing. And the Argentine economy, last time I saw some numbers, is growing at about 9% a year. It's growing faster than the Chinese economy. They got their heads on straight. They're now buying and paying for things and paying cash. They were put on a cash basis, COD, And now more and more Argentines are going to work, and they're pulling themselves out of the hole that they put themselves into. And that'll go on for a while. And then some politician will come along and tell them, what you need in this country is a central bank with more paper. And we need lower taxes and higher benefits with a better welfare system. And then they'll go right back through. Argentina, in my lifetime, has been through at least three monetary collapses that I can remember. I mean, the Argentines are the slowest people to learn that I think God ever put breath into. They, along with the Bolivians and the Peruvians and the Ecuadorians, you know, the South American banana republics, they used to call them, they go through these boom and bust cycles. They want to have wealth and prosperity, and they don't want to work for it. They want to take shortcuts. Now, there's a way to wealth and prosperity, but it's not through socialism. It's not through communism. It's not through paper money. That it's never worked in the past, isn't very likely to work in the future. But when they come out with these new debit cards and they make promises to you, we'll save your house, we'll save your job, just come down and get the number. You people will line up to get the number to save your houses and to save your cars. It's going to lead you to no good end, but you'll buy into the program because that's what everybody else is doing. I was watching a piece on TV the other day, and they're talking about housing. And this couple in Napa Valley, California, bought a house. They're both working, and they bought a house for about $200,000. And when they were asked, you know, how they were going to pay for it, and as time went on, they said, well, you know, if we get into trouble, a lot of other people are going to be in trouble first. And they're right. When these people get into trouble, financial trouble, there's going to be a lot of other people in this housing bubble that are going to be in trouble first. So they'll all be in trouble at the same time, and they'll all be in trouble together. How in the world does that benefit anybody? How does that benefit the nation? Now, I want you to remember this, boys and girls, that when this collapse comes, there's going to be tons of money, great opportunity, and a lot of money to be made. You know, boys and girls, opportunity is like pie crust. It's everywhere. It's like rain. It's everywhere. There's an old adage, you know, that Lenin came up with. He said, promises are like pie crust, made to be broken. Well, opportunity is like rain. It's everywhere. You take advantage of it because it's there. And there'll be great opportunities out there, great buying opportunities. You wait until all these people are in trouble and look at what you'll be able to buy with the cash that you have in your pocket. I'm about out of time. We're going to have to leave it right about here. Let me give you a final reminder that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. For more information, just go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friend.